The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io, the ERP built natively for e-commerce sellers. Fulfill streamlines the complexity in your business to save you time and money. From smart order routing to warehouse management, accounting to inventory tracking, they take all of your complexity and all the things that take a lot of time and manual effort and streamline them under one unified tool. Their clients range from seven-figure brands all the way through companies doing hundreds of millions of dollars per year so they can grow and scale with you. And they're the highest rated ERP in our community of private sellers, according to member reviews, scoring higher than Odoo, Skubana, Brightpearl, and yes, even NetSuite. Actually scored quite a bit higher than NetSuite. So if you want to streamline the complexity in your business, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of OneClick Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight figure e-commerce brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, we're going to be diving into the story of someone who worked for really at high levels of fashion in the fashion world and the garment industry, clothing world here in the States, took that knowledge, left that corporate world, started her own clothing business, making high-end, high-quality yoga apparel, partially to do that and also partially to be able to focus more on family and have a kind of a better ability to control her own schedule and her life. So very excited to welcome Kira Karmazin to the show. She's the founder of KiraGrace.com. And Kira, excited to dive into all of this. It's a super, very cool story, and congrats on building something pretty amazing.
Thank you so much, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and you're in San Diego, which this will probably air either at or right after we do ECF Live, but San Diego native, I believe, right? You're going to be, so we're kind of coming into your city and very excited to check it out. You've got a super cool city. Did you say a third generation San Diegan?
Yes. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. I was born and raised here, but I did leave for 30 years and came back. I think we were sharing earlier just how much I took it for granted, but being here the second time, you know, for the second chapter in life is just, it's just beautiful. There's really no better place.
And what do you love about San Diego for people who have either never been or don't know it well?
It's the weather. The weather is just phenomenal year round. It's really wonderful all the time. I mean, it gets a little bit cool in the winter and a little bit warm in the summer, but it's magical. And I've lived all over the place. I've lived in the Northeast, Northwest, Southwest, like everywhere. It's just perfect here.
What about people who say, entrepreneurs who say like, hey, I get it. Beach, weather, phenomenal. Running a business in California is really hard. Taxes, just kind of red tape. Thoughts on that? Is that overblown, or do you feel like it's just kind of what you? It's real, and you have as a price you have to pay for kind of living in a beautiful spot.
Oh yeah, it's a sunshine tax. So we do pay that here. Yeah, it is really expensive. I actually started the business in Atlanta, Georgia, and Atlanta is a very friendly, Georgia is a very friendly state to entrepreneurs. And I was literally shocked when I came to California. I relocated back to California to run the business, and the fees and expenses, and it is hard, but it's a lifestyle choice. You know, and given my entire family's here, it's, you know, there's really no other place for me.
Do you feel like in the headlines a lot, you see all these headlines like people fleeing California, moving out, the state shrinking, you know, all this doom and gloom. Do you actually see that? And I'm guessing, you know, as an entrepreneur, we tend to kind of flock together a little bit. I'm sure you have some entrepreneurial friends. Have you seen many people, especially entrepreneurs, leave the state because of it? Or do you feel like not necessarily?
I have, you know, I definitely have. Or I've seen people do sort of a similar setup where they relocate but keep California as a vacation home. So I've seen that, but I've also seen people leave to just go all the way to Florida and live there. I get it. I understand it. If I didn't have this enormous family, and when I say enormous, it's huge, huge family here, I might consider it. And my husband and I did consider it for a little while, you know, and we thought about relocating and going, you know, we explored Vegas, we explored Texas, but in the end, home is home.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And it's a wonderful place to be. So it's just, yeah, there's no better place, but it is expensive and it is difficult.
You mentioned, I think at least maybe in the ECF bio that you put on your profile page, that you left the corporate world because it was super demanding and you wanted to focus on family more. And, you know, sometimes people have a demanding career and then they leave and start a business and they find that it's even more demanding than the career that they left. So I'd love to hear you talk a little bit, like, how has that trade-off been for you? Like, have you been able to build a business? Because I love this topic. I think it's really interesting. It's like family, business, the interplay there is something I'm always trying to optimize for and usually not doing it perfectly. But how did that work for you? Like, did you find that you were able to actually spend more time with your family, with your kids? And, or I'm sure there were seasons of that, but yeah, talk a little bit about that, how that transition went and if it kind of ultimately played out like you'd hoped.
Well, both are demanding, you know, corporate, the executive roles that I've had were demanding, but being an entrepreneur is demanding, as you said. I didn't leave because it was demanding. I left because for me personally, there was a conflict between executive level responsibilities running a business that size and my goals as a parent. You know, I managed, the role I left was at Carter's in, and we were based in Georgia. And I left because I managed three teams in three locations and I was on the road 70% of the time. And that is not an understatement. It's just the way it was. I was the person that traveled the most at the company. And as a single parent, I wasn't comfortable at that time, or comfortable ever, asking my child to make that kind of sacrifice for my career. You know, it just, our relationship was getting further and further apart, and I was delegating parenting. I had an incredible nanny, but it was just not the way I wanted to lead my life, you know? And you only have one chance to parent, and yeah. I didn't want to screw that up. So I made a decision. It was a personal one. It was hard. You know, I love my job and I love my career. And I think you can probably hear it. Like I've loved my career, whether it's Care Grace or the roles that I've had before that. So starting Care Grace was scary, but I knew I could do it. You know, I had worked at Lucy, so I knew how to run a small business, quote unquote, small business that looks really big to me now, but it's about small business. So I knew I could do it. But I really needed to step back and take some time and be a parent. I ran Care Grace as a hobby, really, for the first 4 or 5 years. And I absolutely gave myself the flexibility that I needed. I took my daughter to school. I picked her up. I went to games. I took her to lessons. You know, I had a relationship with her and that I didn't have before. And I really wanted to do that. I was able to spend time with my father, move back to California where he was, you know, and he passed away recently. So those are investments in family that I had to make. And those were more important to me than my career. And then as my daughter grew and as life moves on and over the 10 years, we got more serious about the business, you know, and over the past 5 years, I've been really serious about it and growing it significantly and having fun with that, you know, and bringing on these amazing rock star employees that, you know, are running the business. So I absolutely was able to achieve what I wanted, which was flexibility in my life that I could never have had in that role.
I love that. It's so cool. How old was your daughter when you quit to go spend more time with her?
She was 10.
10. Okay. Yeah. I have a 10-year-old daughter right now, and it's crazy how I've given a lot of thought to like how much time to invest in the business versus spend with three kids. The oldest is 10. And the thing that always comes back to me is like, they're just, time is always so valuable, but you can work on a business throughout much of your career. You only have kids at an age when they're at home for a short period of time. And that time is, you know, kind of subsequently exponentially more valuable. And if you miss that window, it's gone. So it's amazing you did that. And that 4 or 5 years, so it sounds like you weren't retired, but you were working on Care Grace, doing it somewhat, but really focused on your daughter for like 4 to 5 years straight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's
yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were lucky in the business because we were new. I had some connections in the yoga and activewear business from working at Lucy. It was a new brand. It was at a time where people were interested in trying new brands. We got on the cover of a lot of magazines. I mean, we just got a lot of press right away. And so this was before direct to consumer, but we picked up a lot of wholesale accounts. And so we were primarily a wholesale business to boutiques and, yoga stores, and that's what we did. And so it just wasn't that time consuming. Running a D2C business is incredibly time consuming, but running a branded wholesale business primarily wasn't as much. I probably worked 20 hours a week at that time, you know, for years. And it wasn't until we pivoted, you know, I started working more.
So I want to get into your story. Yeah. We'll get into Kira Grace just a minute here. But you kind of, I don't know if you started your career, you spent a large portion of your career at big names like Victoria's Secret and Gap, places like that. What would surprise people about how the clothing and the fashion industry works? Like, is there maybe twofold question? What was that experience like? What did you take out of it? And what would surprise people about the inner workings of some of those, like, you know, national well-known fashion retailers?
Yeah, I think one of the most probably surprising things is, you know, just how empowering an experience Victoria's Secret was. You know, I've never worked so hard and loved every minute of it. It was the most challenging role I've ever had. But I loved it. I mean, I just loved it. I was a vice president of merchandising, and Victoria's Secret at the time was an all-woman leadership team. Female CEO, female CFO, female EVPs, female VPs in most roles. And it was a democratic but really high-performing and high-functioning team. It was an incredible experience for me. I really felt like the education I got there was like the Harvard of retail, you know? So that was one of the, I think, surprising things. And, you know, I think overall, functionally, like working in a corporate culture versus entrepreneurship, there's one of the biggest differences is just how siloed you are in a big company, you know? And when you're running your own business, you really do everything. You're sort of... Mm-hmm. And have your hands in so many functional areas.
Yeah. So you were VP of merchandising for Victoria's Secret, you said?
Yeah, there were several of us. So it was broken down by categories. So bras, panties, sleepwear.
And what do you, I hear the word merchandising as a e-commerce, you know, someone with an e-commerce background. And traditionally, I think my mind immediately goes to, you know, retail, right? Like, how does a store feel? How's a product presented? How do you make it appear? How do you set the setting so that it feels very attractive to people? But it also has, you know, it also very much can have connotations and impacts on how you do that digitally as well in e-commerce. So what did you learn at Victoria's Secret about like merchandising really well? Like, what are some of the cornerstone things that are either work for retail and maybe even especially can be kind of brought over to the e-commerce world?
Yeah. And I think what you're talking about, merchandising, store merchandising, that's an element of it. And that's part of merchandising at the store level. But merchandising in a bigger framework is really having the ability to understand your consumer insights and being able to like really plan, see the future for her and plan the product lines for her or him or whatever your customer is. But it's more about understanding your customers' needs and being able to anticipate them and then create the products to support those needs. That's a merchant. And a merchant is a person who sees around the corner. So the merchant is the person that's making the call. Are we buying more red or are we buying more pink? Which one is the one that she's going to need? But there's also an incredibly disciplined analytical piece to a merchant's role because a merchant's also responsible for delivering the sales, the inventory, the turnover, the profitability of the product lines. But there's a creative side to merchandising as well. So it's what does it look like? How do you present it? How do you present it on whether it's direct mail, your website, email, across the board? Like the merchant is, I always think of the merchant role as like the hub and the spoke, right? So we're the hub. And then you've got team members that are helping support that vision for that product line, whatever that product line is that you're working with.
So what I was thinking about merchandising is like a small fraction of the entire piece.
Exactly. You're thinking like a store level merchandising, and that's part of merchandising. And it's part of like that hub and spoke. But when you're in the role that, you know, the vice president of merchandising, you're responsible for like the entire business operation of that, like the profitability of that product line.
I mean, that sounds like, so customer insights, how things look in the store or online, how they look in direct mail, the P&L ordering supply. This sounds like pretty much running most of the business right there.
Oh, right? It is. Absolutely. Yeah.
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 That's great. Okay. So that was a great crash course, very loose term, a great like Harvard education, like you said, in terms of running your own gig.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. I went from working at big companies where as a merchant, you were the hub to one of my smaller experiences was working at Lucy Activewear for VF Corporation. And that's where I think I really, really love the entrepreneurship experience because VF Corporation bought Lucy. It was around $60, $70 million. And I stepped in as VP of marketing and merchandising. But it was a smaller organization, not small, but smaller organization. And I had to do so many different roles. And I loved it. I loved being responsible for marketing and the website and design and production and merchandising. So it was my first experience really as an entrepreneur, but kind of within a corporate framework. And prior to that, what I was saying about the difference in corporate is you're relatively siloed. So merchandising, although we built a pretty big framework when we talked about it, it's one of the functional areas. And then you have finance and then you have planning. But when you're in a smaller role, like at Lucy, or certainly running your own business, you're doing it all, which is exciting to me. I think that's really fun.
Do you still enjoy that as much? Because you've been doing, when did you found Kira Grace?
10 years ago.
Okay, so 10 years. So you've been doing this for 10 years. And I've been a similar time frame. And I like it, but I also have these days where I'm just like, I would love to be able to just take one area and go deep on that for a month or 2 weeks. And because on any given day for a founder, like you said, you're like, today I'm recording podcasts. Monday I'll be doing a couple of coaching calls with my team. There's tax issues. There's like the finance. There's all of these. You're always, you have so many hats, which is most oftentimes fun. But I remember one time years ago, I was filling in for a team member and I just spent the whole day answering like support emails and I got done. And there was no existential questions or issues that didn't have a good answer that I had to like weigh the pros and cons about with like high stakes. It was just like answering emails and it was a discrete task. And I got done at the end of the day and I felt the sense of satisfaction. And I was like, I don't think I want to do that for the next 20 years. But I also felt like that was really nice, like to have such just a limited scope and go deep on something. So do you still feel that 10 years and you still love kind of having so many hats to wear?
I'm having less and less over the years. You know, I've been through, Kira Grace has had a life cycle all on its own. And even with the team members that I have in place now, I have such high performing team members that I'm stepping away more and more from those tasks. And, you know, as we mature as a company and our team is mature, you know, has had more seasons behind them. Yeah, it's interesting. I was out for personal reasons, but I was out for almost an entire month and the team did amazing. And I literally couldn't really do anything at all. I couldn't access, I couldn't talk to anyone. And I was fine. It was just some things going on personally, but it was incredible. The team really doesn't need me at this point.
That's cool.
Which is an incredible place to be, right? So, like I said, Kira Grace has had a life cycle, and I'm so proud of where we are right now and the team that we have in place.
I geek out. I love hearing about people's teams, especially their kind of philosophies for leadership. So, talk me through a little bit. What does your team look like, especially your key roles? What's the composition?
Well, we are a small but mighty team. One of the most critical roles we have is customer service, and everyone, including myself, you know, has taken their turn behind the wheel at customer service. And a lot of our talent has come through that customer service role. So we've got a rock star customer service person. She's got a great Nordstrom's background. And our customer really, you know, expects that level of service. And we really, really believe in having a personal person. One person, you can call them, you can talk to them, like a contact, almost a friend at Kira Grace. So that's one of our most important roles. And then our second one is our merchant and creative lead. And she's responsible for the look and feel of the brand, you know, and that's across all customer touch points. So she merchandises the product line, the website, and our email creative, you know, and keeping the voice consistent throughout the customer journey. And she's incredible. We have an email manager. And she's dedicated solely to email because email is one of our most important, you know, channels of communication with our customer. You know, as an e-commerce business, it's critical. So she's completely dedicated to email and I love her and she's fantastic. We have a marketing manager position open. So that's a newly created role. We got together as a team and really thought through what we need to move forward. And a lot of that role has, as a company, we've morphed over the past. That role has existed in the past, and then we sort of absorbed it, and we realized we really missed that. So anyway, a marketing manager role is open, and that will be responsible for paid ads and overseeing content and influencers and ambassadors. And then we have two interns. One is responsible for our content. So she's managing our blogs and all of, you know, the content we put under our three pillars. And we have a social media intern, and then we have an admin.
Very cool. And do you, I mean, you mentioned the focus on, you have someone who's customer service dedicated to that. I just kind of heard in the way you spoke about it, how important that is. Email. I think a lot of people maybe with a team that size wouldn't have one person dedicated solely to email, but given that you do kind of make some inferences here, how much of your business is driven off of repeat business, loyal business based on the product and the fact that you just have great customer service?
About 60%. 60.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay. Yeah. That's so cool. And so, I mean, and you supplement it with paid as well, it sounds like, but that's not the primary driver of the business.
It's important because every customer has a life cycle. You know, we don't keep everyone forever, although we would love to, but customers have life cycles, especially a brand, you know, we've been around a long time. So yeah, customer acquisition is important. So we do customer acquisition primarily through Facebook. We've tried a lot of different things. We've tried TikTok and Pinterest, but Facebook has really always been the most successful for us.
Nice. And still working pretty well, kind of, you know, early 2023?
Yeah, actually, January is always good for us.
Interesting. Do you think it's like a New Year resolution? People starting to like think more about fitness or like kind of re-up their fitness game and apparel? Why do you think that is?
No, I think the costs just go down. You know, it's not as competitive. Pricing on the platform is not as competitive in January as it is November and December.
Oh, of course, from an ad buyer perspective in terms of that makes sense. Got it. Well, you, when you think about like talking about your team, do you have a certain style of leadership? Like, and it could either be how you think about leading a team, or it even could be a couple of people who you really have admired and emulate their leadership or a past boss or manager. How do you think about leading a team?
This is an interesting question because I think my leadership style was one thing through the corporate environment, and then it morphed a little bit as an entrepreneur, and now it's like dialing back. So as a merchant, merchants are visionaries, and that's your job. And your job is to get people rallied and behind customer insights and actionable business plans and coordinating the team and getting people excited about the vision of the business. As the owner of a small business, that was harder for me. And I wore a lot of different hats. I tried a lot of different styles over the years and even got into micromanagement at one point. This is like years ago, and that's just not a good place for anyone to be. So I think, you know, over the years, adapting that and just going back to being the visionary and, you know, that my style now is really support my team. We talk a lot about we want people to live their best life, achieve their own personal goals, have fun. Like those are all really strong and important elements to being happy at work. Yeah, I think it's just evolved. But my goal right now is just to allow my team to do their jobs and make sure constraints are out of their way and make sure they have the support to do the job that they need.
Yeah, giving them resources, getting rid of obstacles. I didn't hear you mention like a COO type of person in your, like you got email, customer service, all these other roles. But it also sounds like you're fairly, you know, you have a lot of autonomy. You can take out, you know, you're gone for a month, et cetera. Do you have a COO style position? Do you act as that, or do you not find you don't need one?
Yeah, that's probably me. You know, we outsource a lot of technical work that needs to be done. We outsource financial work, you know, bookkeeping and things like that. Maybe because I came to this with so much deep experience in finance and running a business, some of them just aren't obstacles for me and they're kind of fun. You know, I like the financial part of it. I like the operational side of it, but they're not necessarily heavy tasks. And I think we're generally a creative team. We consider ourselves all creatives. Like we were joking earlier about the tech limitations, but you know, we're primarily a creative team. And so maybe the ops function is not as much of a priority as it might be for other organizations because it's just naturally, we gravitate to the creative side.
Yeah. If by tech limitations, do you mean the fact that we shipped you a terrible headset that wasn't working? I think you were being very polite and diplomatic. So
no, we were just like, budget. You know, struggling getting that done or, you know, silencing my computer, stuff like that.
You're overly kind. You had mentioned too, before we hopped on, like I often ask people like, hey, what are you excited about? What's working now? To see if there's some things that maybe I haven't even thought. Well, there often almost always are things I haven't thought about that would be great to talk about. And you mentioned you're really pumped about a number of things, but one that you mentioned was your summer and your product line. Like I asked you and like, I felt like the warmth come through the microphone with how exuberant you were about. So tell us about that a little bit. Like why, what is it and why are you so excited for it?
Oh my gosh. Well, being a performance brand, you know, primarily technical fabrics, technical fabrics are mostly spandex, you know, Lycra based fabrics, and they're heavy. They're, you know, they can be heavy. And so summer is not really our friend. And summer has always been a tougher business for activewear brands. Over the last few years, especially through the COVID times, we've shifted our perspective considerably into being more of a lifestyle brand and offering athleisure and all of our performance fabrics and more ready-to-wear silhouettes. And that's been a really big, big growth vehicle for our brand, but still using the fabrics that we were using. So again, summers were always, you know, not our friend. And this isn't unusual, by the way. I have lots of female entrepreneur friends in running similar type businesses, and we talk about this. So this year, we decided to do something really different, and we're offering garments that are not performance, and we're pushing the envelope on lifestyle. And we've got a collection now for summer was inspired by a trip to Portofino, Italy that I had, but it's a beautiful capsule of clothes that are really wear now. And I think our customers are going to love it. I cannot wait to launch this product line, as it's new for us, and I think it's something that's really exciting. So it's ready to wear, but still keeping our filter in place about comfort, effortless elegance for our customer, but in new ways that feel really appropriate for the summertime.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. And you obviously love e-commerce. You're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log onto our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active form with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana, or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members. You know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools or agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion.
You mentioned that you think there's lots of opportunity out there, which again, to someone who's not in the fashion industry, totally, you know, ignorant and naive here, I would say that sounds like one of the most competitive, packed, crowded spaces out there. So why do you feel that way?
Oh, it's just huge. I mean, the market is huge, and we're just a small business, small part of it. I see endless opportunities. We are limiting our own opportunities at Kira Grace. There are so many things that we see as opportunities, and we have to pull ourselves back constantly to stay within our framework and stay within our financial plan. I'm just really optimistic, and I think it's because we love fashion and we love the fashion industry and we love our customers. So I don't see it that way.
Have you found that people, how important is it, do you think, for people when they see that? I think there's a couple kind of trains of thought on that. Sometimes people say, hey, this is going to be, I want to do this for supply chain. It's easier. Sometimes people are, it's a patriotic, keep things local, keep in your home country. Sometimes people think it'll be a really compelling selling proposition for people. Thoughts on all three of those, why you do it and where you've seen it be advantageous?
Well, it's important to me. You know, it's a part of what I stand for, and I really believe in keeping manufacturing in the United States. So it's a really important pillar for us. And we attract customers that also believe that. So most of our customers care about that. Maybe not all of them, but I think most of them do. You know, we spend time talking to them and we survey them, and I chat with our best customers on the phone or do Zoom calls, you know, and we do that and we talk about that. And that is something that's really important. I don't know if it's patriotic. It's just a value, you know, of supporting people and the American family, I guess. But yeah, I think it is important, but certainly not to everyone.
Yeah. Do you get, I mean, when you're manufacturing clothing in the US, is it mostly done in LA? Like, is that, or is it all over the place that you can find manufacturers?
Our factories are in California. Yeah. We have a factory outside of San Francisco and a factory in Los Angeles. And there is quite a bit of manufacturing in Los Angeles for sure. But there's manufacturing in New York, Arkansas, Texas. You know, we've explored different states, but for the product lines that we do in terms of activewear, really the premium factories are here.
Do you still do wholesale?
Very little.
Very little. Okay.
Very little.
Why is that? Is it, I mean, because wholesale, great distribution, less work. You don't have to bring in the customers. Obviously, your margins are smaller. What is it that made you decide to go that route?
Well, we didn't have any major wholesale accounts. So we had hundreds of small independent yoga boutique owners, and these yoga boutique owners. So they were yoga studios that would sell a rack of clothing or two. And then as, you know, this is 5 or 6 years ago, but as more consumers started to purchase products online, and like Lululemon started to push their online business, and Athleta started, customers started to shop there rather than at their little boutiques. And so my boutiques were going out of business. And in 1 year, we lost our top 1 through 10 business owners. And they were all independent stores. So, and some had larger businesses, like 10,000 square foot activewear store in Rhode Island closed. So as that started to happen, and as that started to collapse, we kind of sat back, you know, and thought, well, what are we going to do? Are we just going to close the business, or are we going to pivot? So we pivoted. So then we started all over again and learned digital.
Interesting. But if you had the choice to build either, and let's say, assuming wholesale was viable, or there's someone out here right now who they've got some wholesale, it's still working, they've got some D2C, and they need to decide which way to focus, niche agnostic or industry agnostic. If you had to spend more time focusing one way or the other, which would you have, rather have a wholesale heavy model or a D2C heavy model?
Oh, personally D2C, because I've been on the wholesale side. So as a buyer or as a merchant for these large stores buying from companies, I mean, it's just, you can be crushing, you know, you can have so many. Yeah. I would much prefer to have a D2C relationship.
Yeah. Great. Kira, this has been fascinating. So I've gone all over from parenting to the fashion industry to wholesale versus DC, and you've been super generous with everything. I'd love, as we round out here, a couple of things. One, check out their beautiful line and the brand they've built over at kiragrace.com, especially if you're in the yoga space. And I'd love to kind of finish this with a lightning round if you're up for it. So I'll just fire off a couple of questions. Feel free to give me super short, punchy answers, but I would love to end it that way if you're game.
Sure. Go for it.
How would you describe the e-commerce environment in a couple words right now?
Cautiously optimistic.
Ooh, the tide is turning here. This is good. That's a good sign. Thoughts on Lululemon in a sentence or two?
Incredible design.
Favorite fashion store or brand?
Veronica Beard.
Veronica Beard. Can you, for those who don't know who that is, myself included, can you give us a couple sentences on that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a brand. It's a clothing brand that I just follow, and I love their style. It's two women founders, and it's really feminine and beautiful.
Very cool. A favorite memory from your childhood in San Diego?
Going to the beach.
A specific beach? Do you have a favorite?
Oh, Ocean Beach.
Ocean. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I don't know if you saw, we're doing one of our parties for ECF Live is right on Mission Beach. We're taking over right where the roller coaster is. Do you know?
Oh yeah, I know
it.
Belmont Park. Yeah.
Belmont Park. Yep. So we've got a private spot there. It'll be fun.
That'll be fun.
If you weren't living in San Diego, which I know is where you love and is home, where would you live?
Lake Oconee, Georgia.
And why?
It's a beautiful lake outside of Atlanta. So I lived in Atlanta for a few years. And Lake Oconee is just—it's just gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful. I love Georgia. Georgia's warm, and I love the South. Yeah, it's would probably be my number two.
Yeah, cool. favorite product you've ever sold across your e-commerce career? And I know that's a big question, so maybe it doesn't have to be the ultimate, but maybe one of your top favorite products that comes to mind.
I think it's the Warrior Victoria Halter. It's an iconic piece and it's like recognizable for our brand. It's kind of architectural lines to it.
Got it. And this is a Kira Grace product.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Hardest part of your business?
I was thinking, I don't know what's the hardest. Nothing's really hard, but the part that I don't like is paying bills.
Yeah. excellent choice.
No, I literally have to like force myself to sit down and do it like once a month.
Do you not have stuff on like just auto draft or do you mean business bills or you mean like the power bill for the office?
Oh, just like the little things that need to get done. Yeah. It's just that kind of like level of work I don't really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Admin rote work.
Yeah. A lot of things are auto, but you know, paying our vendors, for example, is not, those have to be approved and reconciled. So yeah. Anyway, it's just not fun.
How much money in the bank is enough? So this is always the doozy and slightly uncomfortable question, but I ask it for those reasons partially. So how much money, either cash and or like liquid, you know, securities in the bank, where if you never made another cent in your whole life, you'd say, you know what, I'm good. I can live a happy, wonderful, fulfilling life, take care of the people that I need to and myself for X amount. If I make more, great. But if not, I'm okay with X.
So I'll give you a number without a number because I think about it in terms of lifespan, right? So how old are you? How long do you think you're going to live? So 30 to 40 years of expenses in the bank probably should do it. Maybe 40 years.
40 years. So I also have a rule where if somebody doesn't give me a number, I press them for it as a tradition on the show, as listeners will know. So I'm going to ask one more time, at least one more time, what would that number be 30 to 40 years if you had to guess?
Well, that would reveal how much I spend in a year. So I just can't answer that.
All right. Fair enough. How many hours a week do you work?
Well, currently I've worked zero for a while, up to 60, you know, but I would say my standard is probably, I'm pretty good at about 30 to 40.
30 to 40. Okay, nice. Number one hobby outside of work, and let's say you also can include yoga, which I'm guessing is something you're passionate about.
Travel. I love to travel places where I can hike, you know, Norway, Iceland, New Zealand, Kyoto, just, yeah, traveling is my pleasure.
Cool. And finally, who's someone interesting that comes to mind that you've met through e-commerce fuel, either at an event or maybe it's someone in the forums that you really enjoy their contributions, but just someone that comes to mind?
Ooh. Well, I went for someone I met personal. I mean, it's Brett Haney. He's just so warm and kind and generous. And he and his wife put together this meetup for San Diego ECF members and they hosted it at the beach. It was just so lovely. And they have an avocado farm. So like, you gotta love them.
Oh, their avocados are so good.
Oh my God, they're so good.
I got one. They're amazing. I had the pleasure of trying one once and I've never had a real avocado until now. Like it was amazing. So I'll try to get Brett's. Do you ever remember the name of the avocado business? It's Haas something. I'm trying to remember.
I'll send it to you. I do have it.
Okay.
I have his card.
Yeah. Send it to me, please. We'll link up to it. So Brett's a phenomenal guy and man, I think he's been a member since the very beginning.
Yeah. And when I say generous, I mean, generous with his like time, you know, mm-hmm. generous with his spirit, just warm, kind person.
Yeah. Brett's an amazing person. Kira, this has been phenomenal. Thank you for the time. Thank you for coming in and sharing. Congratulations on building what's a really beautiful, very cool brand with a lot of integrity and unique style. So kiragrace.com, again, make sure to check it out. And very much looking forward to seeing you in San Diego here in a couple of weeks.
Me too. I can't wait. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Thanks so much. See you soon.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the e-commerce fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to OneClick Upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell, and also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network, live from New York.